WTAM 1100.
I can't wait to hear about the aloe vera bed sheets or the ultimate Swiss Army life. The deal boss, Matt Granite, Channel 3's Morning News. Will's Ways to Save is in. You looked up what's been trending and some of the most bizarre bargains that we're shopping for, huh?
They are, and I'll leave it to our listeners. I'll say anything that's strange on this list was not only usually tied to a sale that I suggested, but these are some really practical and extremely weird items.
Well, and it shows you what people need sometimes. So go through some of these.
Absolutely. So I'll go with exactly the items you selected. First thing is a pair of aloe vera bed sheets. We all know about aloe vera is something that you can sometimes eat at the bottom of some really interesting drinks.
Mm-hmm.
More commonly, something in hand cream used as a moisturizing effect. And the aloe vera in bed sheets apparently creates sort of a cool finish, a hydrating touch that stays with you over time, and they become kind of less sweaty and cumbersome in the hot summer days. This is a $100 sheet set down to $49, and our listeners loved it. Top rated. They went crazy for it. The second item that you mentioned, Bill, was a Swiss Army knife basically on steroids. It is. It's a Swiss Army knife meets Leatherman meets, I don't even know what I would call this thing, a 12-in-1 DIY tool. So it's 12 tools built into your, what looks almost like a Swiss Army knife, but it goes so much more beyond a typical Swiss Army knife or Leatherman at a fraction of the price. That's well under $45, down from 100.
You know, one other item, and I don't know what it is about a garden hose. I have been so frustrated in wrapping up a hose. They kink, but there's a collapsible hose, too, that you've got up there. I may take a look at that thing today.
Well, here's the thing. There's 3 left in stock right now of this garden hose. People can't even keep it in. So I was like, all right, I'll put this collapsible hose on the list.
Yeah.
Kind of creative. It's actually such a serious deal. What I'm going to do, Bill, is I'm going to buy one of the last remaining ones. Oh. I'm going to test it out.
All right.
And I'm going to dedicate a full deal day to the garden on Will's Ways to Save in the next 2 weeks.
I'm all for it.
Because this list has provided merit I did not intend.
I don't know how many times you spend even more money on a hose, $30-$40, and it still gets, kinks in it, or it doesn't wrap up, doesn't look right. But anyway, this looks like a good one. Okay, we'll wait on you to check it out. A couple clicks, you'll have the deals. If any of those things kind of interest you, just go to WTAM.com. Keyword save for the deal boss, Matt Granite. Watch him on 3 this morning. Back here, same time tomorrow. Have a good day, bud.
Awesome.
Get Mike Snyder Sports mornings 15 and 45 past on News Radio WTAM 1100. Drive needs a win today, man.
Yeah, they do, Bill, and they need some good pitching, and they didn't get it last night from Shane Bieber.
Hands dropped below the belt. He fires, and the pitch is hammered to deep right center. When it lands, it'll be 7-1 Pittsburgh.
Mm.
So Polanco has his 18th homer, 58 RBIs, and got to believe that'll be all for Bieber.
Yeah.
7-1 Pirates on a no doubt about it bomb to right center.
I mean, they just teed off. Pirates go on, win it by a score of 9-4. They've won 11 in a row. Bieber crushed for 7 runs in less than 2 innings. The manager put it this way. It
seemed like he was having trouble commanding his fastball, like he has. Too many of them were not getting either in or, where he wanted them.
No, he did not. Now the Indians try to avoid the sweep. Trevor Bauer on the mound today, 1-10 first pitch. And you can hear it right here on the home of the Tribe as the Indians try to salvage one against the Pirates. Now the news was not good in Akron last night for Andrew Miller. He did make the rehab appearance there yesterday. He allowed 4 runs in just a third of an inning. So he has some work to do before we see him at Progressive Field. Well, we're going to see Kevin Love at the queue. In fact, yesterday he was there in the morning. Signed a new contract with the Cavaliers, who have made a commitment to him, and he's making the commitment right back, as he said he wanted to be here. He gets a 4-year, $120 million extension. That means he's under contract with the Cavs for the next 5 years. On the state of the team going forward without LeBron James.
To me, it's not a rebuild because we have talent, we have championship caliber guys, and we have young and fresh guys that are going to be willing to learn and come along in this league, as I mentioned. But I think guys just putting on their hard hats and coming to work every day. That has to be the identity to our team.
And that was why they did it that way. Some great video out there of Kevin with the workers at the queue yesterday. Rather ironic when you think of the last 4 years and all the rumors around him. And actually, they did nearly trade him a couple of times. And there were always rumors about Kevin Love. Kevin Love, where's he going to go? And now LeBron's gone. Kyrie's gone. Kevin Love is here and will be going forward. The Browns begin training camp tomorrow. Top pick Baker Mayfield got his contract done last night. The first overall pick inked a rookie rookie deal worth $33 million guaranteed. Still unsigned as of this morning is cornerback Denzel Ward. You need to get that done today to get him on the field, because I think the Browns definitely are planning on having him as a starter for the upcoming season. Home of the Indians and the Cavs, Mike Snyder, News Radio, WTAM 1100.
This is the time to take off the ripoff of power. We have to do it.
Farmers will be the biggest beneficiary. Watch. We're opening up markets. You watch what's going to happen. Just be a little patient.
President Trump in the breadbasket yesterday. Kansas, Missouri, a couple of fundraisers out at the VFW, too, in Kansas City. Reports today billions of dollars of aid to farmers hit by tariffs on their way to help them. They're talking trade at the White House today. Head of the EU is in. Bill Zimfer's on that this morning. And trade and tariffs, it's on his to-do list today, huh?
It sure is. But it remains to be seen exactly what this meeting will accomplish, Bill. For this reason, Larry Kudlow, the economic advisor to the president, said recently that the European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker would be coming to Washington with a deal to propose to the president. There have been European officials now that say, no, there will be no deal proposed by the EU. They're just there to try to avert a trade war. This all has to do, of course, with the tariffs. Steel and aluminum tariffs the president placed on imports coming from the European Union, yet to bring down the big hammer, which would place tariffs on imported automobiles from Europe, and Germany would be hit hard by that. But, you know, there's always a numbers game involved here, Bill. The president claims the United States has a $151 billion trade deficit with the European Union. The European Union has produced some numbers that show they actually have a trade deficit with the United States. And the president has a pattern of not including services in his trade deficit, only goods. So services like financial services, technical services, legal services, not included in the U.S. numbers, where the United States has an advantage here. You can tweak these numbers any way you want, but the answer is there is no easy answer to this issue. I doubt we're going to see an agreement coming out of Washington today.
Let me pick up on that and get you out here on this on the agricultural side of this. Yeah. I see a lot of the national media now that are showing up at farms. A lot of farmers supported Trump, and now with soybeans and corn, pork prices dropping, they're starting to, yep, you know, short-term kind of saying, hey, we need some help here.
And they're going to get it from the White House, right? $12 billion. But they don't want that, Bill. Farmers don't want aid from the White House. They want to be able to grow crops and sell those crops. And the president's comments that you played just a couple of seconds ago, that this is going to be great for farmers, the numbers show the other way around. Take, for instance, Mexico, which is the top buyer of U.S. corn. They are now buying more from Brazil. In fact, the jump from 2016 to 2017, Mexico buying Brazilian corn jumped 970%.
Bill Zimfer on it this morning. More plays out at the White House for those meetings today. Thanks, Bill.
You're welcome.
Let's talk some tech and what people know about you and how they're making money off your health. Greg Stebbin writes on this. Follow him on Twitter at Greg Stebbin. Hi, pal.
Hey there. Good morning.
Earlier, I had Michael Chertoff, former Secretary of Homeland Security. He's got a new book called Exploding Data, Reclaiming Our Cybersecurity in the Digital Age. He's writing about a lot of things we talk about and worry about when it comes to info that's out there. You've come across a couple things on health about what our insurance company knows and what we're filling out and how they're following us and what it may cost. Let's go with car insurance here first. How much does my car insurance company know about me?
Not as much as they'd like to. They're working on that.
Okay. All right.
So let's take some hypotheticals here. Let's say there's a really great bar and grill across the street from where you work, and so you eat there with your buddies every day for lunch.
Yeah.
On your credit card bill, that looks like you're drinking during lunch.
Ooh. Okay. Yeah, you could maybe think that, yes.
Do you ever drive in your car and listen to sad songs on Spotify?
I listen to sad songs at times, maybe not on Spotify, but if I did, they would know that too.
Yeah, and they might think you're suffering from depression.
Oh, yeah.
And driving. Did you know people who downsize their homes tend to have higher health care costs?
I didn't know that.
Did you know that?
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Hold on. Is this legal? Can they change rates based on this stuff?
Yes.
Oh, okay. What are we going to do about it?
I was going to throw one more out.
Oh, okay.
Did you know that radio hosts and announcers and reporters tend to have higher health care costs?
I don't doubt that at all. With the
I
schedules we keep.
Because I thought it would be fun.
I would agree.
But you're right. I mean, in your profession, you get up super early in the morning.
Yep.
And that can have, that could mean that you fall asleep driving. It could mean that you stay up late at night and are not taking care of your health. It can mean all kinds of things. So to the degree that insurance companies can get this information legally, believe me, they're getting this information legally, and they're working to get more and more information about us so that they, rightly or wrongly, can make assumptions about us that help them raise our rates.
Let me run something by on this with tech and health. I have not seen it yet, but I have been told by several people that the world-famous Cleveland Clinic that we're so proud of is working on a deal with a certain consumer electronics store with two B's in the name, to where some of my health care information will be tracked on things that I pick up from this certain store that has two B's in its name. Instead of me going to the doctor, you know, you already do video conferencing with your doctor. We already have people that do remote checks on their heart. But there's more and more of that remote information about you as and your health that you will share with a setup that they're talking about with two of these big chains. And again, we're talking about health insurance or health information, though, that'll be even more out there that could affect insurance rates.
So I don't know of that particular story, but there's nothing in it that surprises me. And I think here's really the catch on this. I call it the Eeyore test. Remember Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh?
Sure.
Everything was bad. Everything was negative. On one hand, what you just described could save people's lives.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
What if that store with a double B in the Cleveland Clinic knew you were going to have a heart attack 24 minutes before it happened? They could just come and get you.
Yeah.
On the other hand, insurance companies, advertisers, and hackers, and many others would also like to get that information. So the reason this is such an important topic to talk about, and I bet Mr. Chernoff said something similar, is that we get out ahead of this and we begin to create some laws and regulations that are appropriate for us as consumers. And maybe even give us a very clear choice about what we share so that this just doesn't develop in a sort of willy-nilly way and we look back and we're horrified at what we've created.
Yeah, on that point, you know this because you work in the media business. I mean, the laws, they're trying to catch up with what we're doing in technology. We're still regulated by the FCC Act of 1934. Is still what I'm licensed under, yet I'm competing with Facebook and Google when it comes to the business model in communications.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I mean, it's not just the healthcare industry. It's not just the broadcast industry. All over the place, we're living by antiquated laws and rules and customs. And, you know, it is going to come down to, ultimately, us as consumers having a very loud say about this. And nothing. We are not going to like what we get. But when you look at how much money is there for insurance companies and advertising industry and all that,
right,
you can see that unless we gather together and make ourselves heard, we're going to lose because we can't compete as individuals.
Yeah, it's a small thing. Get your head around this. I understand you go to the drugstores, they've got their frequent shopper card, all that stuff, because they're tracking what you're buying and they can get the coupon. But that's a great example. You're giving them information about your health. And I say, no, I don't want the card. And you can't blame the cashier. They're just trying to get an extra bonus point for the day. They want me to sign up for it. But there's a great example on the front lines of information, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And you actually have a couple of choices here. And I think what I'm about to say is one way we as consumers might fight back. You know, you can get that card with a made-up name.
Yeah.
And a made-up email address.
Good point, yeah.
And I think in the future, not in the far future, we'll have services that we as consumers pay. And what those services do is make up fake data about us. So that when it falls in the hands of the insurance companies and the advertisers, it's meaningless because here's Greg Stebbin and he's been shopping for maternity dresses.
Well, you never know. You mean we could be our own bots, I guess, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Watch out for that Cleveland Clinic electronic store with two B's in it name. That may break sometime. You heard it here first. Greg Stebbin, follow him on Twitter at Greg Stebbin. Thanks, pal.
You bet. It's great to be here.
News Radio WTAM 1100. Bill Wills, Mike Snyder alongside as we lead up to the Hall of Fame weekend with Jim Thome. And Mike, this morning, longtime manager and friend, of course, Mike Hargrove on News Radio WTAM 1100. Grover, we thank you for your time, first of all. Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's get to it.
Do you recall the first time you heard about or saw a guy named Jim Thome in the organization?
God, Bill, that was back in the olden times, so I'm not real good. Not one specific moment. I think that Jimmy, it seemed like to me, thinking back, that he kind of eased his way into the conversation, and he didn't come just busting in and to where everybody said, "Oh my goodness," it was one of those gradual things that just became what it became, which is probably the best way to have happened.
Good point.
I don't remember much about that time.
Mike, what about his transition? Initially he played third base and then the move over to first. What about that phase of his career?
Well, John Hart and Danny O'Dowd and I talked a lot about Jimmy at third base. And Jimmy always had really good hands. Jimmy was from third base was a little inaccurate, in his throws. Had a good strong arm. We felt like he could be a very good third baseman if he could, get his accuracy more consistent. And finally came to the realization that, we were fighting an uphill battle. There's just some things that take a lot of time to be corrected. And we felt like Jimmy's accuracy was one of those things. Felt like it'd be a good move to put him at first base. We needed a first baseman at the time. The first base is still a power position. So he fit that bill. And I think it was a good move for Jimmy. It was a good move for the Indians. Don't get me wrong, but I think it was a good move for Jimmy because I think, somewhere down deep in Jimmy's mind, he didn't have a lot of confidence in his ability to be consistent with his throwing accuracy. And that took that worry away from him and let him concentrate more on just being the player that he obviously became.
And a very solid first baseman, of course, into being a Hall of Fame hitter. Mike, and I've said this to you and I've said this about you over that 90s team, I don't think you'll ever get enough credit for the way you just kind of kept everything together. You had some incredible talents and incredible personalities to deal with. And talking about Jim, and the steadiness of him, it had to be nice to know that you had Jim Thome in that locker room every day.
Well, yeah, and it's nice to not have not go to the ballpark. I mean, every day you go to the ballpark, there were fires to put out with that club more so than others. But there were always little things and that you need to tamp down and put out so it didn't become a big blaze. It was comforting to know that Jimmy never was one of those guys I had to worry about, that I had to spend a lot of time trying to keep focused. He was very focused, a great teammate. I think all of his teammates, anybody that's played with him, will tell you that. But you knew that the neat thing about Jimmy is that you knew you were going to get his best shot that day all day. Dave Garcia told me a long time ago when I was playing. I was in a 1-on-1 conversation with him on an airplane, and he looked at me and said, "Mike," he said, "you know what my job, the essential part of my job is that I do." And I said, "Oh, what's that?" And he said, "To get 100% out of however how much you have to give that day, each player. You may have a fight with your wife, or you may have bumped a car or had an accident, and you come to the ballpark, and you may only have 80% of your 100% to give that day." He said, "My job is to get 100% of that 80%. And that always stuck with me. I never had to worry about getting 100% ever out of whatever Jimmy had to give that day. He gave it all the time.
Well said. Mike Hargrove with us for a couple more minutes talking about the career of Jim Thome. With that in mind, Grover, you had a wonderful respect, I think, about you because you played the game, because the way you treated people. And with that in mind, I think as fans, we're reminded what a grind it can be. 162, and your health is something you never want to take for granted when you're playing. But a guy like Thome, it just seemed like night after night, he was there for you, right?
He was there, yeah, every night. The only time we ever had a problem with that was when he broke his hamate bone right at the end of the season. I can't remember what year that was. I think it was 96, I think, somewhere in there. And, had a broken hamate going into the postseason, so we had to worry about that and keep him healthy and available to where he could perform. And you know, a lot went into that. The doctors and the trainers and the staff, the coaching staff, did a good job. But that, you know, I mean, you look back on the career that Jimmy had, at least, you know, with me. And if the only time that you have to worry about something was when he was, you know, physically injured, like the hamate bone, one time out of, you know, 9 or 10 years that he played for me, that's absolutely amazing. That says a lot about Jimmy.
Jim, Tomey going into the Hall of Fame this weekend, Mike, and the word came down, of course, in late January that it was official. I think we all knew it was going to happen, and certainly on the first ballot. In the time that's passed since, as you've kind of reminisced and talked with others about Jim Tomey, any other thing that kind of bubbles up to you to talk about or to express about Jim Tomey and your feelings about him?
You know, you say it all the time. You hear other people say about it that, you know, Jimmy's as good on the inside as he is on the outside. I think that the thing, looking back on it, that I've, you know, the times I've, you know, thought about it since it's been announced, is the fact that, as I said before, Jimmy was a great teammate, and not just with the Indians. I mean, everybody that played with Jimmy or knows Jim Tomey absolutely respects the way he leads his life and goes about his business. As he got older and got more, you know, more, built up more, gravitas, I guess is the word, maybe not, but, you know, people started kind of gravitating toward Jimmy not so much for direction as much as for the calmness that Jimmy had. I mean, Jimmy played the game and had a wonderful short memory on when things didn't go right. You know, he could forget about it and concentrate on the next time that's a real unique ability. And in baseball, that's essential. And Jimmy had it in spades.
Well said. Former Tribe manager, the great Mike Hargrove, with us talking about Jim Tomey. Grover, we thank you for your time. Have a good day.
You bet. Y'all be good.
Thanks, Mike.
The book, Exploding Data, Reclaiming Our Cybersecurity in the Digital Age, mentioned our former Secretary of Homeland Security, Mr. Michael Chertoff, kind enough to join us here for 5 good minutes. You know, after reading this, I want to go back to the title, or at least the subtitle. Is it possible to reclaim cybersecurity in this country?
I do think it is, but we need to kind of do a reset of our legal rules and our behavior. I think it's passed from the issue of hiding our data to controlling our data, and what rights do people have with respect to the data once it's been collected. It also has to do with increasing our self-consciousness in terms of our own cybersecurity, so we don't wind up being victimized.
In many ways, we invite problems. We're very open with information, even in commerce, because we want every bonus card that's out there. Is that kind of the opening door when it comes to security?
Well, I think you're exactly right. I mean, whenever someone offers you something for free, usually you're paying with your information or your data. So bonus cards at the grocery store, credit cards, locational data on your phone, even your automobile may be generating information about your behavior. And what most people don't focus on is it's not just kept separately, but all of this can be actually collected in one place or sold, and then someone can look across all of your data fields and get a very accurate, detailed picture of everything that you do.
Let me touch on the law aspect of this, because you write in the book about, you know, the legalities of some of this. In many ways, the law needs to catch up with technology. Is that fair?
That's exactly right. And, I mean, we've built a legal structure that made a lot of sense with 20th century technology, but is now not fitting very well with what we do in the 21st century.
Michael Chertoff, former Secretary of Homeland Security. I want to go back to some controversy about this metadata. At the time, I'm not sure any of us in the media, and I'll blame ourselves, knew what we were talking about as far as what NSA or whoever it was listening in. Could you break that down for me, what that was about?
Yeah, let me be clear. So the rule in terms of what NSA was able to do is they cannot collect information in the United States or target Americans. What they were able to do was collect information about people calling or communicating with other people overseas. And sometimes, incidentally, that data, which did not involve the content of the communication, but just the fact that there was some connection, sometimes Americans got caught up in that, because if they were calling, for example, a number in Afghanistan or going to communicate with an IP address in Pakistan, that would be picked up if it was a known terrorist or somebody who was being looked at. But even there, the data had to be kept very separately, had to be minimized, and you could only actually look at the data if there was a reason to do so. So I think in many ways the concern became overblown. That actually was a fairly modest and well-regulated program compared to some of what you see with the private sector.
Michael Chertoff, the second man to serve as our Secretary of Homeland Security, has written the book Exploding Data. It's fascinating, Reclaiming Our Cybersecurity in the Digital Age. You know, I was thinking, and I always appreciated the way you handled yourself and your job, sir, in that if, you know, when you miss, we knew about it. But what we didn't know about was when you stopped things before they happened or they spotted things. Most of us are out to dinner with a family, and we come up with an idea, we write it down for work, or we wake up in the middle of the night. You probably did the same thing, but with stuff you worried about. It's like, have we thought about this yet? Was that what your life was like at Homeland Security?
Well, right, because what you're trying to do is actually look around the corner. I mean, in the criticism of what happened on 9/11 by the 9/11 Commission, what they described as a failure of imagination. And the challenge in Homeland Security is to balance having a good imagination about what might happen, but then also having the judgment to evaluate what is a serious, real risk and what's kind of an imaginary, not particularly realistic risk.
And those things can be debated, but at the end of the day, you also have the law you had to follow, right?
That's exactly right. And I think one thing people would be happy to know is that, at least as where the government is concerned, the laws are actually pretty tough restraining what the government can do. And I think we also need now to take a look at what's done privately to make sure we're also safeguarding our values.
Great points. It's a great read. Exploding Data, Reclaiming Our Cybersecurity in the Digital Age, Mr. Michael Chertoff. Sir, thanks for your time.
Good to be on.
Service of Falls Motor City. Okay, they lose 9-4. Bauer on the mound today, and then we start the road trip. Do I have that about right so far?
Got to go to the dry cleaners in between, too.
You got a lot to do, don't you? You got a lot to go.
Life is tough.
I know. I understand. You know what? We're just playing Pittsburgh and at the wrong time. I mean, they're playing some good ball. And, hey, we've made mistakes, too, though, right?
Yeah, you know what? The Indians haven't played very well in really any phase, pitching, hitting, or defense. And to your point, Bill, you're catching Pittsburgh when they can't play any better. And when you play a team as hot as Pittsburgh is right now, they take advantage of every crack that you start to open. And my goodness, I mean, they've decided these games early and quickly. And, you know, it makes it a tough decision there for Neil Huntington, because are the Pirates really this good? Are they really a playoff team? And do they need to go and add here in the next 6 days? Or are they the 500 team they've been much of the year? So, you know, that's a decision the Indians don't have to deal with. But goodness gracious, they're playing as well as any team we've run into here probably in the last couple of months.
And, Tom, I think we've seen the last 2 days where the box score doesn't tell the whole story. Other night, they don't turn the double play ball. Last night, Tyler Naquin getting back on a ball. It wasn't the easiest of plays, but, boy, your center fielder's got to make that catch, doesn't he?
Well, yeah, it's not, as you said, Mike, it's not an easy play. But when you're playing well, you make those plays. And when you're not playing well, you don't. And then a team like Pittsburgh, instead of that being a scoreless second inning, it ends up being five runs after there are two men out. And, you know, like you say, that's not in the box score, but that's how quickly these games have changed in the early innings, really in back-to-back games, where plays that weren't made, in essence, decided the ball game quickly. So, yeah, the Indians simply have to play better ball defensively. And, you know, they need to play like Pittsburgh's playing right now. You know, there isn't a sense of urgency because of the division, but you know what? That could change in a hurry, too. All of a sudden, Minnesota's 7.5 games out. I still think Minnesota's got a streak left in them. Just can't believe they've been as bad as they've been all year. So, you know, you better not start assuming anything.
Tom, we're really less than a week away from the trade deadline. What's your vibe as where the Indians are now? They obviously they made the significant move last week getting the relievers. What do you think they're thinking right now?
I still think they want to add a right-handed bat, Mike. Whether they can add a center fielder, you know, that's a full-time center fielder, I don't know, because, you know, there's not a lot out there right now, and it sure seems like teams have been smart holding on to players. I think Baltimore got more than people thought they might get for Zach Britton, who's been hurt for the last 2 years and is a free agent to be. So, you know, I think what you're going to see is these deals, whatever they might be for whomever, are going to come right down to that last day, next Tuesday, sometime around the deadline. But I still wouldn't be surprised if the Indians added a right-handed bat. You know, it would be nice to have a full-time center fielder. Naquin and Davis can play center field, but Naquin is much better in right field. And at this stage of his career, Rajay Davis, you know, is a complimentary piece that you don't want to play every day. I just think we have seen where the outfield defense has been hurting with some of the injuries to Chisenhall and Bradley Zimmer.
Tom, let me get you out of here on Jim Thome. He goes into the Hall of Fame this weekend. 8:20 all morning. We've been talking Thome this morning, Mike Hargrove. Tomorrow, Charlie Manuel. Friday, Jim will join us. Could you basically share that the last time you saw him or the introduction you did on the field for his special time here, was he pretty much the same guy that you saw in Winter Haven years ago, maybe the first time you saw him?
Yeah, and I think that's the thing that makes him so special, Bill and Mike, is that Jim Tomey's success on the field has never changed him as a person. He is still the humble kid from Peoria, Illinois, the Chuck and Joyce raised. You know, he never let any of this go to his head. He's a better human being than he is a player, and he's a Hall of Fame player. You know, and I just think that is hard to do in this day and age, whatever walk of life you're in. Who's ever had some success in whatever, usually it changes them somewhat. It never changed Jimmy. And I think he's as excited about this for his family, you know, for Andrea and the children. And, you know, for Big Chuck, I mean, the fact, you know, the shame of it is his mom didn't live long enough to be there because I've told this story before, you know, on the back of her headstone in the cemetery, it's chiseled in what her view was from her seats at then Jacobs Field. And that's how much it meant to them. And for his mom and for Chuck to have that put on her headstone, I think you know why he is who he is.
Tom Hamilton, appreciate your time, pal. We'll be listening today.
You bet. Thanks, guys.